Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Sheldon, it's been a long time, about a year, and I'm not on a baseball field like last time.
True, that was true. Last time you were on the field, you were literally on the field. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I was doing play-by-play for Little League and everything, so that day. But, well, not play-by-play, but I was in charge of the sound system.
Yeah, I remember.
So we have Sheldon Primus, who's been at this a little bit longer than I have, podcasting and everything else, much more experience in that area. He is, what's the name of your podcast?
Safety Consultant Show with Sheldon Primus, and that's it. I couldn't think of another name, and I'm like,
that's it. I wanted to hear it from the expert here, Sheldon. So basically, your podcast is about safety consulting, and a lot of it is focused on the safety consultant or safety manager themselves, and how to build a business, and how to communicate, and things of that nature, as well as like what we do with insightful programs on new things coming out. And you're the one that I got the idea for from going on the OSHA website and starting to read things. So,
oh, get out.
Yeah.
Let me warn you.
So,
why, thank you.
But, you know, they, yeah. So, you know what I do. I go on the OSHA website, I read the press releases, and I go into the press releases, and sometimes we hit upon some really big things there. I mean, awesome information.
And you get so much when you get on the, and everyone, it's just do OSHA.gov. When you get there, you're looking at the top of the heading, you're in a, you know, banner, and you'll see just an area where you can just hit their news. And it's, you know, like right about the about page and everything else and the help page. But it is really good for you to sign up for what they call quick takes. And the quick takes is every other week, you're going to get a little snippet of what OSHA's doing. And it's really cool because it gives you a little heads up as to what's the regulation. But then also, it's one of those things like when you see the sites and the penalties and you're like, dang. But not only that, but it's also the hazards that these workers are exposed to. It's also could be things your workers are exposed to. So you can see the little way OSHA thinks about these hazards by reading those stories. Yeah, for your show, it's like gold.
My favorite one recently was where there was a trench collapse, all right, and no fatalities, but the guy did get hurt. And his supervisor, I don't know how this wasn't a criminal investigation, an actual criminal investigation. The supervisor was throwing stuff at him and hitting him with objects, as it was described, to get him not to call 911 when he's in there up buried.
Right. That's going to be a willful.
Yeah. I'm like, how is there not a lawsuit? How is there not a thing? And then, like 3 weeks later, he did a similar situation.
Yep. Yeah. That's a willful. You can see the pattern. And for those of you that don't know OSHA, like, especially if you're overseas and you're not too sure about the US OSHA, they actually have like little, it's not little, there's technical terms. You'll find it in what's called a field operation manual 164 FOM. Right. 64, just put that in the search box and you'll see chapter 6 shows you how it breaks down all the citations and everything. So when it's a willful, that means you really just cared about the work, and you had no, you just disregarded your workers and you put them in a situation to get hurt. So that one that you described is a willful all day long legally. You could just look at the definition there and just like,
oh yeah. And then we had the other one was I got from New Mexico OSHA, and to my knowledge, we were the only show that actually covered this was the Alec Baldwin Rust Productions thing, where I actually got the copy of the report. It was all publicly available on their website, and I actually went through it. It was the summaries available. Every once in a while, they screw up and they send out the entire report. But on this, which is interesting too.
Yeah.
But they, that's not normal.
Yeah.
And what they did was I went through the whole thing, and Ian Punnett, rest in peace, from Coast to Coast AM, he got a copy of that show, and he said, why isn't anybody talking about this and everything? And when the East Palestine issue happened in Ohio, I had posted something, and he put me on Coast to Coast AM, which was really good. 654 radio stations.
That's awesome.
So,
goodness.
And to be honest with you, one of my goals for starting Safety Wars in the podcast was to go on that show. That was like one of my goals. Because I've been listening to it for pretty much my entire adult life. So, I achieved that. But anyway, back to you. This is about you.
No,
so, we also have.
This is a conversation from us.
Yeah. Yeah, but I invited you here. I don't want to, you know, dominate. I have a tendency to do that, and if you hadn't noticed. You also have the Facebook group, the Safety Consultants Facebook group. So if you're on Facebook, you're dealing with safety consultants, which you invited, you started it. Yep. The great Jay Allen.
My man.
Me, and the Diary of a Bald Man himself.
Alan Warford. Alan, right. Ethan Allen.
Are all managers here? So yeah. Of that. So yeah. You want to talk? What's posted on there? It's mostly programs from me, you, Jay, and Alan, and different insightful things. And you know, it's like any other Facebook group. You get stuff on there that sometimes doesn't belong on there, and you end up rescinding it and deleting it and everything.
Yeah, we get that. And the group, if you go to facebook.com/groups/safety-consultant you'll get there and you'll have to ask three simple questions so we get to decipher if you're a bot or not. And most people miss like the basics, which is, do you agree to the terms of this group? And they don't have anything there. And we obviously can't let you in the group if you can't agree to the terms. So that's what we really do with the managing portion of it, and then make sure that it doesn't get too spammy. But the purpose of the group, when I started it, it might be about 5 years now.
Right.
And the idea was I wanted it to be an area where people could talk about safety consulting and just a business in a free tone. Because, you know, you go ahead right now in any Facebook group and type in, how much do you charge for your 10-hour course? And you might get a handful, if that, of people telling you their actual prices. So the group... Right. Originally was just to, you know, open up that hood of the train on that car and kind of go to the engine and check it out. And the metaphor here is the car being the consulting business. No one literally teaches you how to be a consultant. We know the safety chops, but the business chops was missing. And that was the idea, is to kind of mirror those things together. And the group is just so we get a safe space to talk and to really kind of communicate. And also, if you want to promote stuff, we always let you promote. It's just my rule was one promotion in, help three people. So that was my original rule that I love is, you know, you get one promotion, help three people. So you answer three different comments, or you talk about, you know, what you could do to help someone else or promote them by a thread or something. So that was my original thought is, you know, sure, promote, but go ahead, let's give back. And then talk about stuff. You know, I literally tell people my prices all the time. It changes and I give caveats, but the group is usually working together, and your input for not only this group, but man, I love there's another one out there that I see in the U.S. safety.
Yeah.
I mean, You've been like on like social media to promote safety and health and the podcast, the services you provide. It's all.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, you know, what you do is unique because usually people say, well, you're helping your competitor. And my experience is that there's enough work out there, right? I think it's yours also.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to be another, not like what we were talking about before, these big safety companies with 500, 600, 800 people out there working for them. That's not what my gig is. One, you know, that's a lot of human. Once you get above five people, you need a human resources manager of some sort, even part time.
Yeah.
You know, you need an HR person because you cannot do the work. You cannot do the managing. You cannot run HR and do the billing and the accounting and everything all yourself once you get over five people. So it becomes a complete and total nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's it not only is a nightmare, but it just becomes impractical because honestly, you have to think of everything you do when you're starting a business for yourself is your hours equals money. So if you're taking time fooling around on the website and trying to figure that out, what's your salary times the hours of you spending your time? So when you're really doing like a growth in your business, the best thing you could do is focus your energy on what gets the business going and what keeps the business running and future stuff, and leave the administrative stuff as you grow to different people for that aspect. And you could do that with groups like Upworks. Upworks, you can get someone to do it per contract, you know?
Yeah.
Don't like take on a salary for someone full-time unless you could pay for that person full-time regularly because they're giving up. They're believing and trusting in you that you're going to help support their family. So don't take that lightly. Yeah. So do piecemeal stuff where you could get them for, you know, project care to manage the thing for X amount of hours a week or something.
Right. So like with me, and if you've done business with me, you've heard of Tracy, right? And what happened was when I was running for office, I started to get a lot of stuff. And my campaign manager, Nora, who's a friend of the program, I won't mention her last name, but Nora, she, what she ended up doing was, she said, my husband's business partner, his wife, Tracy, manages accounting, bookkeeping, everything. You need to get somebody like her here. And then when I met my wife, she said, you definitely have to get someone like her.
Yeah.
So she runs the whole side of the house for the last going on 15 years now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Symmetry when you actually meet somebody like that, that, you know, it may take you a couple of times to find someone. And actually, for me, my assistant is my daughter. So I know that she's come from good stock. Right?
The one working in Vietnam? You got to love the World Wide Web, right?
Yeah, so she just travels, you know, I'm only one of her clients, but she actually has, you know, the chops for it. So might as well have, you know, a family member help you if you could do that. Yeah, sure. The idea for, and I know the thought for me always goes around consulting, and not only do I help people who want to be consultants, but you guys are not thinking about it yet, but you are the consultant for your company. You're here too. Don't think you're excluded in any way.
Yeah.
But generally, you're going to just surround yourself with people that are going to tell you could do stuff. And that's when you find that symmetry. If someone, you say, man, I want to do this, and they don't tell you five reasons why you can't do it, they keep brainstorming with you of, oh, well, maybe we could try this angle, or let's try that angle. And that's the person to keep.
Well, the other thing is that I want people to tell me when I'm wrong.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
That's I learned that from not to name drop, but you heard of William F. Buckley. You're from New York, you know, right? William F. Buckley, right? Yeah. His brother, Reed Buckley, ran, and the family still does. They run a school for young professionals out of Camden, South Carolina, called the Buckley School. And I took a couple of classes there, and I knew Reed Buckley. pretty well, just on a professional level, right? Mm-hmm. And he, when I went down to take one of his courses on for young professionals, and that has an environmental tie-in. You remember Union Carbide in the 1980s, the big accident they had in Bhopal, Colombia, right? He sat down and he was looking at that, and he said, these people don't know how to communicate. And the hazards, you know, he says, there's something wrong here. So what he did was he came up with the idea of having a school to talk to young professionals, and maybe not so young, to how do you communicate? How do you develop a message?
Yeah.
And he said, and he was brutal. You had to come down and you had to submit a writing sample, and you had to give an example, like a video tape, back in them days, video tape, of you giving a presentation or talking. Didn't matter. They just let it up. Just you talking in front of people. We don't care what the venue is. Right. And they ripped you apart. And I literally ripped you apart. He said, look, you're paying a lot of money here. You're getting your money's worth. This is what the problem is. And he wasn't so nice about it. He was a nice guy. But he wasn't so nice in that class because he would rip you apart because he says you're here, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there was one, and I won't mention the name of the company that took one of the courses. And he said, does the person have emotional problems after he reads one of your letters? And today, we could say that.
Oh, yeah.
We could say that. 20 years ago, nobody was talking that way.
No one thought about it.
He thought about it. He said, you're going to give somebody an emotional problem based on the way that you're writing it was a letter of termination. So you cannot treat people this way.
Wow.
You cannot treat people this way at all. You have to have some empathy. You have to have some class, something. Yes.
And if you're in a small town and you treat people that way, you're going to get a rep. And then if you're an employer, that means you're probably going to have usually the area that's going to hit is your entry level. So you'll always have an entry level kind of a foundational issue. So therefore, high turnover is what you'll see as a symptom. So if you start doing those things like you don't value your workers, they feel that and they'll get disengaged. So now you're getting a workforce that's disengaged and you get turnover because people don't want to work for the employer that, you know, treats you like junk. So now your organization is going to be stymied. You can't grow unless you get a transformational leader. And so it's a whole organization.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, and anyway, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, you had, what was it, Phil Russell on a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, he is an OSHA lawyer and had him on before, but Phil is really good at helping me understand rules and laws because that's what he does at a high level. Right. And he does literally go and fight for people in front of federal OSHA in DC. And he's that guy.
Yeah. I mean, he had on the latest one was with the legal cases that came out, the Chevron deference situation. I read the again, because of people like you, I read the actual, I read legal briefs and I read Supreme Court decisions and everything.
Yeah.
How do you see that case impacting OSHA regulation? And basically, my understanding of it is that if there's a dispute on how a law is written, the agency is able to do the interpretation and they have a mechanism set up rather than an outside court, like a regular court system or anything like that. And
that's correct.
That's current, right? So, what's your is that your understanding of it? Basically, I know
it's going to change. So currently, that's the way it goes. And normally, for occupational safety laws, it takes roughly about roughly about 8 years. That's like the sweet spot to for anything to become a law, and has to go through all kinds of periods of comments and all that. And that minutia is kept in what's called the OSHA kind of like keeps all that information together, and it's regulatory information and meeting notes and all that stuff. So that is, I forgot the term, but you'll still come to me when I'm not thinking about it. But, oh, preambles. So the preambles is where you're going to keep that. So with the Chevron deference, if there is no the overturning of the Chevron deference, which was in 84, the Chevron case, means that practically for us. So let's say OSHA does a specification standard where they are going to tell you that during the heat stress at a certain for it to be where regulation kicks in, it may be a certain wet bulb test, and it's going to tell you the humidity factor is this much, and now at 90 something degrees it triggers here. So if OSHA makes that law coming up soon, then someone could say, well, I don't believe that I could follow that, and it'd be really practical for me. So they're going to fight it and say, why can't I go, you know, at 100 degrees trigger this law?
Right.
So that conflict now with this overturn is going to go to a court. So it's going to go from the local up to wherever, but the possibility would be,
we're all going to be walking around with these. Oh, I'm holding up a thermoanemometer.
That's it. Right? Yeah. So it'll be is the individual, now the court would say, well, we side with the business or we side with OSHA. And so they make the decision. But if legislation, like actual Congress, goes in, they make a law about heat stress with help from OSHA and their technical advisors and everything else, but Congress initiates it, and then it goes to Senate for approval, President signs it into law, then at that point, you would have the heat stress law. Imagine that times all of our rules and regs, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to really bog down the system, but it's the mindset that Congress is functional is going to make it, you know, the laws work. And that's not always the case when you look at the cycle of a government. You know, most governments have cycles where they're functional and not functional, and that's why you get political change, right? So the idea right now is with Chevron deference getting overturned, OSHA won't, and the technical advisors won't be the primary people to make that decision. It goes to the laws, to the court. So therefore, if you don't have a functional government at the time during that cycle, then you may not have any new laws.
Yeah, my understanding always was that this was this grew out of the progressive era of the 1890s until about 1948 the end of World War II and FDR, right? Where it used to be an act of Congress to issue a regulation. And then they came up with this regulatory scheme, and then it got affirmed with the original case you're talking about that put in the Chevron deference, right? And then, you know, like you said, cycles. And I was listening to a demographer over the weekend, Thursday. So yesterday, I jumped in the pool to clean the pool, right? And I have my Rhodes speaker, you're the big one, you know, and I'm broadcasting a podcast. They had a demographer on there, and he had some pretty good insights on this. So demography, some people classify that as an area of economics, believe it or not, right? Because everything is driven by demography, either by the numbers of the people, it could be the gender makeup of people, it could be the racial makeup of people, it could be the age of people, all that goes into demography, right? Yeah. And everything, and tracking these statistics. And according to him, we're going to see a major change. Like all the political upheaval we have right now is a direct consequence of the baby boomers being there. And now they're starting to die off here. And there's no, and usually the people who are the moderate people are, I don't know how old you are. I'm Gen X, right?
I'm a Gen X.
You're a Gen X. We tend to be the people in this situation that would be moderate. Like moderate, we try to get along. We try to negotiate. We try to do whatever. sometimes you're just trying to get along, you know, okay, screw it, we're just going to move forward. And what you're dealing with is the baby boomers on one extreme, and then now you have the Gen X's, and now you have the millennials, right, I guess, after that. We have a very small generation, us. The Gen X is the smallest generation in recent memory. So now you have two extremes, and you have very few moderates in the middle. So now we don't know where this is going to go, this 2024 election. And as I've always said, the 2024 election doesn't matter. It's the 2028 election that matters. Those old folks are going to be gone. They're not going to be leading. It's all going to be a new crop, fresh crop of people coming in.
But each election has its own consequence too, so I guess you'll also have to see what's the change. And for OSHA, I talked to Jordan Barab, who was the assistant. He was assistant under Dr. Michaels when Obama was in office. So for 7 of the 8 years, and I asked him a question. I said, here's what I tell students, and am I right or wrong? And I asked them if what is the difference between when a Republican is in office and a Democratic president is in office. So he says usually OSHA still has to do their normal stuff of enforcing big things, but what you'll see in practice would be more business friendly under Republican, and compliant would be more compliance assistance type activity, and just let business regulate itself more. That's traditional conservative view. And then on the flip side, with the Democrats, usually it's going to be more of an enforcement type of thing, just to get business to act at least to minimum. So that seems to be when the cycles of elections make a big difference, is if you do think that there's going to be a president that is going to get out of office. That change is the biggest change. So other than that, if you think a president's going to get reelected, then you're good until 8 years.
Right.
You're one.
Well, this could go either way. It's like this. I don't normally speak politics. It's about as deep as I'll get into it on my show and everything. But because I was involved in politics for so long, right, I still get people screaming that I should have a political podcast. And I said, are you going to pay the bills? And they said, no. I said, because I'm guaranteed to alienate 50% of the people out there. Maybe more.
And,
yeah. So right now, the only stuff I do is I do a voter education. That's all I do is voter education. I have certain issues that I have. I do voter education. And it's one-on-one small group. I don't do anything massive with that. All right. I think there's more that I can be more effective doing that. And I've gotten offers from national organizations, NGOs, not political organizations, not 501c4 organizations, but, other organizations that have, I'll do it. But again, you gotta, I'm not doing it for free, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
No, because then what happens is they videotape you, and then they sell copies of the video to everybody, and they promote it. And I don't do that.
You are going to be the call to action. They're going to hit a button when they see you do a clip.
At least pay me royalties, something, But anyway, and that leads us to our next thing, which we wanted to talk about. Was the whole you had a program on DEI 45, the ISO 45003, I can't forget, well, 2 0s or 3 0s and 3,
yeah,
which is on right. And what was the other topic on that? I forget offhand, I'm drawing a blank right now. It all was related to DEI and ISO and everything else with that.
Psychological safety,
that's it.
Yeah, so the same with ISO, the psychological safety side. Oops, sorry, dropped my mic there.
Right, and what I think what was really profound on your podcast, on your show, and I don't know if you realize how profound it was on paper, all of this looks great here. It's very reasonable. ISO, right? We want to have a psychologically safe, and we want to have happy employees if at all possible and promote that, right? Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
The ISO, one, International Standards Organization, that's meant as an adjunct to the Occupational Safety and Health ISO that they have out, right? Yep. That's basically, this is how you want to run a business. You want to run it, be professional and everything else. So one of the organizations I work with, they comply with that. If you're sign on with them as a consultant, you have to agree that this is how you're going to conduct yourself, because they're international corporation with clients all over Asia, all over North America, all over South America, Bermuda, the whole thing. So they comply with that. That way it's easy for them to manage all of their people. There's a question, go to ISO, right? Sort of thing. And yeah. Now, right now, I'm in the middle of doing a DEI program, an online program, because I'm hearing this on one side, and on the other side, I want to find out what reality is, right? And judge for myself, which is what I encourage everyone to do. Judge for yourself. You may agree with some of the things, you may disagree with some of them, but come up with a reason. And no, I can't had a thing 30, the 10 things I learned in 32 years of safety I put on a couple of weeks ago, right? And that was one of them, was think for yourself, right?
Yes.
And what was profound was that you had said, well, politics got injected into this thing, and it's not necessarily necessary. It's not necessary. Can we just basically, I'm paraphrasing, but basically we got to treat each other with respect here. And yeah. I and that's not what I'm hearing from a lot of the other organizations I deal with the DEI. It's yeah. become that. And any thoughts on that? You want to build on that at all, or?
Yeah, no, it's psychological safety, ISO 45003, and the DEI and the true intent of it, it all goes to the same ball of wax, which is culture. It's your organizational culture. So the original diversity, equity, and inclusion came from a Google project. And the project was just to see, they put two teams together or various amount of teams, I believe, but the ones that scored the best were the teams who had the diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that's when they coined the term, actually, right. in that event. So the idea was you're getting, you're allowing a space for everyone to feel like they could be themselves. And right. In that case, you're going to also have the creativity of that team that is going to have many different experiences through their life experience and their cultural experience. Right. So therefore, they have a little bit that can add to the project as a whole. So it's supposed to be in the true sense of the word. Helping an organization, or phrase, it's helping your organization be not only more functional, but then also to grow. It's a growth thing. So it's for if companies are going to look to push away diversity, equity, and inclusion, then they're actually leaving money on the table. So that's right. That's
so
the I'll explain that where the things got messed up.
Yeah, I'll explain this a different way, and we'll use, you know, we're human and organizational professionals, whether we like to have that foisted on us or not, right? All right. Safety is a function of capacity and resilience. Your stuff you could do, plus your reactions and stuff, how you're able to adapt. Well, that's basically it, right? Right. So here with DEI, if you're not pursuing it inside your organization, even whether you're going outside and bringing in new people, or even in your current situation, right? Not bringing it with your current staff, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're not using their complete capacity, that's, that makes zero sense.
Zero.
Zero sense. And if something happens, you have to be resilient. Again, if you're not using the complete capacity and going to the worker asking them, hey, how can we make this a better place for you? No. So, for example, the companies say, well, we're all family here. They're not family. They're a team, because family is about unconditional love. You can have that that black sheep uncle out there and nobody can stand, but guess what? You're going to invite him to Thanksgiving every year.
Yeah, it's family.
It's family.
Yeah.
A team, not necessarily. You're not holding up your, there's accountability. You're not holding up your side of the thing. You know, you got to start looking elsewhere in an extreme case. Right. So,
yeah.
You know, Jessica, along the lines, hold on. That's, so along the lines, you know, you know, the whole idea is to use the entire capacity of your team and entire resilience, so you're able to adapt. I think there's a good tie-in to human organizational performance. It's a natural tie-in.
Absolutely. And it's a perfect tie-in, and the whole, again, the whole baseline is structural. In when you're thinking of organization structure, it's just structural integrity of the actual organization is to also include the wealth of knowledge that you have.
Right.
We've seen the practice is where, oops, that's on my end. Sorry, you guys. But the practice is going to be the biggest thing. What we've seen the most was hiring practices. So DEI is in everything. It's not just in hiring practices, but when we see hiring and training, if someone is only going to look for someone that looks like me, you know, I'm a African American, and you know, if they want to just hit a quota of just having a certain number of African Americans in the job, they're missing the opportunity to truly learn. Because at first, with hiring practice for DEI, back when, you know, I'm like you, we were Gen Xers, remember the days when, you know, you only get into a position when some your buddy gets you in a position, right?
Well, that still goes on, but you know.
But there's a whole spectrum where some people can't even get their foot in the door because they're not even, you know, considered. And that was what it was back then. And that's when the hiring practice with DEI started thinking, well, we need a quota. And that's what I think really meant, took things to started making it where it became, when you add quotas to things, especially something like this, you might actually see where someone will think, I'm just as qualified as this next person, but I don't have the right color. And now I feel discriminated against because I'm white, I'm missing this position, where someone who's African-American is getting this position. And then the quota is met, but now you have a person who's feeling slighted, right?
Right.
So the quota in itself, I think, did a disjustice, but what you should see is there is encouragement between two like candidates, regardless of race, sex, creed, whatever. And then the preference then would be, let's see, how can we diversify the organization by also seeing, now, can we put this diverse, quote unquote, air quote, for these guys that can't see me, diverse person in this position. It should, that's at first how it started, and it needed to be just to at least start getting the playing field equal.
Right.
But when you're just doing it for numbers and you missed the heart of, you know, first, before you look for numbers of how many diverse faces you see in your workplace, are these positions being met by the most qualified person, regardless of any? So that's where I think it becomes.
Can I borrow a phrase from one of our colleagues? Right.
Oh,
I forget which colleague it was, though.
We've got.
I don't know if it was Jay. I don't know if it was Todd. I don't know if it was Alan. I don't know if it was Sam. I don't know who it was who said, "Whatever you're going to measure is going to be manipulated."
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
I'm not a fan of quotas for that reason, especially when you're like, you want someone to do near misses and you want to do good catches. But when you put a quota on that, you know, especially if it's a quota of a certain amount and by the end of the work week, you're going to get some quality stuff at first. But towards the end of the work week, is I may have tripped on my suit, on my shoelace, but I noticed it and I tied my shoelace. Yeah.
Right.
And then it's going to get watered down.
Oh, you've gotten those. I have somewhere one of the funniest near misses ever, where a guy went and he started complaining about his coworkers. He went on a rant and about his coworker. He was an angry old man and blah, blah, blah. And that's why this happened. So, you know, but the thing is, it was true. He was an angry old man. So he was just angry at everybody, hated everybody. You know, and like I was saying, now I'm not tuning my own horn here, but a lot of this was not the way that I was brought up, right? Because, I had a mother, and it's been on the program, February 11th, 2021, I think was the program, was my mother had been expatriated from Poland during World War II, sent to concentration camps in Archangel, Russia, the northern port city, and had made her way all through, not too many people made it out of there, by the way, made her way all through Asia and everything else, and grew up with many different Asian cultures, whether it was Polish, right? She was now Polish, then it was Russian, and then it was Persian, and then it was Indian, and then before she finally made it to the United States into Bayonne via San Francisco, right?
Wow. Man, you can almost see that map as you're naming those countries. I'm kind of like in my brain following the line. And
I had Imogene Salva on who wrote a book on her mother's situation, which is the same as my mother's. They're actually in the same camp together, even though they didn't know each other.
Wow.
Right. And what happened with Imogene Salva, a little bit of side note here, the Shah of Iran was, the last Shah was in New York getting treatment before the Iranian Revolution here. And he refused treatment. And what they did was they had, hold on, Jesse, I'll talk in a minute. Her mother was an RN, and they got her in there to talk with him. And he said, "Why should I listen to you? Well, about all this medical treatment or anything?" No, perfect English, right? And she said, "Well, I'm not here to treat you. I'm here to repay a favor." And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, I was one of the children that you allowed into your country. Blah 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 blah." And he had personally allowed all of these children and all these Polish refugees from the then Soviet Union, big long story, to come into the country. And he actually gave them medical care. He gave them food. He gave them clothing, gave them everything that he had, all the meager stuff to get. He said, "Well, how can I not save them? We've got 100,000 people here. I had to make a decision to save them." Right. And what we did not realize, my mother always had a picture of the Shah of Iran in her, one of the children in her stuff. Right, that they carried around. We're like, why? It's because he sent all of the children. He made sure that they had summer camp in his private gardens. So he set up a summer camp. Every kid that came out of there went to 2 weeks of summer camp and had a blast after that, just to make sure that they had some positive childhood memories. That's what that guy did. Wow. Now, the press in this country destroyed him. Absolutely destroyed the guy in the 70s and even today. Oh, how hated, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? If it weren't for him, I likely wouldn't be here.
Wow. That's so, like,
again, point of view, perspective, everything, you know, goes into it.
Yeah, no, that's an amazing story. And honestly, I remember that. And they depicted him even to the degree that there was a wrestler who was
Iron Sheik, right?
Iron Sheik, and that was one of the time periods where they're really vilifying him. And you know, I only got to see that part, obviously, and I know there's some other situations about human rights issues at that time too. But
we'll be covering that in the future show, human rights. Yes, we're all 30 of them. I have it all planned out. So weird. I know, off the wall stuff, right? But anyway, what my point is, this is all foreign to me. Mm-hmm. My family, my father got into a little bit of it, but he was a German. No, he was born in this country, but his parents were German immigrants, and a lot of this systemic racism. They benefited from it? Maybe. I don't know. Because they were resident aliens. My father was a resident alien during World War II, and where my uncle's office is, Ken's Marine Service, is where they had a POW camp for resident aliens and Italian and German POWs. As yeah. He owns part of the property that was on.
Hmm.
And they own. But anyway, wow. The wall is still there. I'll put a picture of it one day. But anyway, so this was foreign. No, and when I went to college, right, I've had doctors and everything of all different races, doesn't matter. So this was a little bit weird. When I went to college, I told you about this before. My father said, you're there at college, and my mother drew Lazarus, primarily my father. You have to learn about the way other people are. You got to learn about other cultures. You got to learn about that. Not everybody thinks the way that you do, Jimmy. So I was, probably could have gotten an African American studies certificate with a little bit more effort. But no, I took all these courses, Black Power I took, and all this other to learn how other people felt and thought. So I'm not surprised by today's social situations. With everything, because like the DEI instructor that I'm going through right now, the program said, they feel that things are going so slowly with the culture evolving that everything, once everybody was on lockdown and had time to think and reflect, and because of these things here, I'm holding up a smartphone, right? And video. Now we have the situation where, and I'm not one bit surprised, I think a lot of these companies are pushing back because of this. And I think I'm not the first one to call it white fragility, but it's white fragility.
Yeah. There's a component of that. And there's just, there's also a component where there are some people who are, purposely manipulating some people who don't know the actual, the benefit for thinking mm-hmm. about diversity, including, equity and inclusion. So there's you always have to ask why. Why is someone going to such length, if you would,
right.
to try to make this thing where it's going to hurt an organization rather than help an organization? And then when you think of the people who are actually trying and they're doing the training and everything else, but they're doing it out of fear, without knowing the purpose. So they think if I don't do a diversity training, then I'm going to get some sort of lawsuit or I'm going to get some sort of legal.
Yeah.
And it makes no sense.
So maybe this is not the best question for you, because I don't know if you know this and I don't want to blindside you here.
Okay. Well,
other than the obvious anti-discrimination laws and everything else out there, are there any real legal requirements? And I know with ISO there might be, or on ESG, right, environmental, social governance, right, there might be. Are there any real legal requirements for this, for this? It's more of a cultural.
There is no, like wording in any kind of laws that I see, or to my knowledge, with the terminology DEI, they'll say it's just discrimination laws, and then usually that's going to be in your hiring practices.
Right.
Then also in your application of whatever the job description is for that person, if you keep you have a certain rules for a set of people and they follow the job description, and you have another set of rules for another set of people and they're also following the job description.
Right.
And what's the difference?
Right.
This is usually going to be a religion or something, or you just don't like this person. Why? So that's going to be more important than trying to, for law's sake, making sure that everybody's going to be treated equally. But it doesn't have a quota or anything that you need to hit to say you've got a blended room that's, I've got 10% Italian, I've got 10% German, I've got 10% African, I've got 10% Vietnamese, there's no laws like that.
Yeah. So, well, this is the challenge, and we're going to make this safety related, right? Before our conversation here, well, I mentioned there about 25 or 30 years from where we were back in the early 90s. And I can see the challenges of implementing these policies, because under OSHA, right, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, William Steiger, right, Senator Williams from New Jersey, right, Congressperson Steiger from Wisconsin, right? By the way, I was teaching the class. I mentioned that, and somebody in the class, that's my uncle, right? And I said, well, did he ever tell you about the Occupational Safety and Health Act? No. So this is probably his greatest achievement.
You know? It really is. It's the stuff that was, for those of you listening, it's the act that preceded OSHA. So whenever you did business with the government made you follow this act so that you now could be under a minimum standard for safety.
Right. But what the idea was, my point is this. This is by federal law. Everyone has a right to safe and healthful workplace free of recognized hazards. I think we know that time immemorial. We all know that by heart if you're a safety professional. We have issues even today. Just listen to my show and your show. We have issues today of implementing something that is a federally defined civil right and laws and codified and everything else. Now do we see where we have something that is not codified, unless you can make it a convoluted kind of way, like an ISO or ANSI or one of the other non-governmental standards, industry standards. Now you can see where we have a problem here with this. And I think that's the problem that we're seeing here, is that we're getting a lot of people and there's a lot of burnout. I mean, I'm listening to the instructor and I'm like, yeah, this is why why I do what I do. Is that the burnout and nobody wants to hear it, blah, 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 blah. And some companies have gone the other way where it's actually impacted their bottom line. I know of five organizations where this negatively impacted their bottom line and they don't see any benefit to it, so why should we do it? And it's like the same arguments I hear about everything. Why should I buy? I plan on doing this job without fall protection. Now you're telling me I got to go out and spend $400, $500 on a setup here, and I have to send them out for competent person training, and we got to send them out, the employees out for authorized user training, and we got to do a subpart M training, and then we got to do subpart R training on steel erection. No, I'm not doing it because this job was scoped out that we're not going to use any fall protection, and you're going to be sitting in the trailer eating donuts and drinking coffee.
Yeah, and honestly, it's the same mindset. It's the same principle that you would see with trying to integrate any kind of diversity. If you're already in a network or at least a group that is resistant to change, they're going to automatically be resistant to change. That's what they do. So
it's not in their business model. You know, and we're used to doing this. And the other thing is their surety and way. Hey, we're doing it this way. We haven't had an issue before. And I use it like this. Just because you have not had legal action, meaning a lawsuit, report to an agency, somebody hurt, somebody, whatever, just because you never had a legal problem doesn't mean that you don't have a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the same thing with people who are trying to, the employers that get fatigued with trying to implement DEI policies and training and everything else. Chances are, if you're going to do some sort of analysis on why they are getting that kind of fatigue and it's because they may have not been fully trained on how to implement things, and they're trying to do things just by numbers, and the actual execution is getting lost. So for instance, if they are mandatory trainings for a half hour once a week on the same topic, you are absolutely wasting your time. And that is going to be something that you're going to say, we have to do, air quotes again, for those of you who can't see, but if you're like having to do it, why? If there's no legal thing and you just want to prove acting in fear, you want to prove that you have training and write it in and have people sign off on it. The activity itself is draining for you and it's going to yield no food. So you are self-sabotaging a system. The organization is literally self-sabotaging the implementation to say it doesn't work. So the system is set up to do what the system does. So if they're implementing it in the wrong way, it's going to be continually producing what they implemented because that's what they did. So they are self-sabotaging the system by doing those activities and then hitting their head against a wall and not wanting to pivot and change and truly embrace the DEI as opposed to resist it.
Right. What I would do And this sounds ridiculous, I know. But what I would do, if it were me, implement DEI, I would do it. I'd call it something else, rebrand it a little bit. And I would go and I would have, like we have weekly safety meetings or toolbox talks. I would do that on things. But the thing is, it would include a lot of different, the ideas of DEI in smaller pieces, but they would have to be different.
Oh, yeah.
So you're not like, oh, wow, we're talking about I'll use a safety analogy. We're talking about the same slip, trip, and fall hazards every week, you know? And it's like, okay, there's slip or eye hazards.
Yes. Right?
But what you could do is give me a call, 845-269-5772, or talk to Sheldon here, and we can set you up with an annual safety meeting program that's not a repeat every week, that is relevant to your organization. So that's a little commercial.
Yeah, great commercial. No, but the safety application is everything that we do is safety. So like, for instance, if you're going to implement more diversity, more equity, more inclusion, that may be another way of doing it, is like literally just saying the term instead of saying DEI. Then that might also get people to, break down what the meanings of the words are. But the safety implication is, there's one underlining is the psychological safety. A worker gets disengaged and they feel like they're not valued by the organization.
Right.
We're also going to be addressing another thing called self-determination. So there's a model out there with DC, DECI, and Ryan, RYAN, called the self-determination theory.
Right.
So if you're going to have a worker feel really good about what they're doing, part of that is going to be not only autonomy, but they want to feel like their work matters. And if they don't even feel like their life matters, then they don't have that self-determination to do work. They're disengaged. Disengaged workers take risk. Increase of risk as the possibility for more injuries and illness. So that's the safety thread.
Right.
But you give psychological safety to someone, they feel like even if you give them an offer to go to a employee assistance program and give them that card that says, hey, call somebody, talk to somebody. I noticed that you don't have to tell me anything. It's not my business, but it's my business to make sure you're safe at work. Here, call somebody, talk to somebody, and you offer that card. That's part of psychological safety. And that's, again, you're showing someone cares. They're going to be committed to at least saying the business or the organization noticed me. And that's engagement that you want, because when you get engaged, a worker now is going to focus on the job. They're also going to feel there's also body chemistry there being released as well. When you get that team, that feeling, you're also going to get that release of all the endorphins, if you would. You're going to get the
serotonin. Yeah, absolutely. We used to just call it treating people like human beings.
Yes.
Well, I think the advantage of doing this is that it's organized more. I think now if you're going to accomplish something, you got to be organized usually, and you have to have a system in place. I think a lot of these systems, putting them in place, probably a good thing there. With that, and I know we all have, and I've always been this way. This is why it didn't really work out in a lot of the corporate settings I was in, where we had a guy who got hurt. And, the old safety trope, that doesn't work. Well, what's your family going to think if you can't work? That doesn't, 90% of the time in my experience, that goes in one ear and out the other. You might as well be talking to Shrek here, it ain't kind of a stuff, it ain't gonna matter.
No,
unfortunately, it should, but it doesn't. I'm going to be honest. And then I said, well, what do you mean? I don't have a family. Now, how would I ever know that if I'm issuing this big program without actually getting personally involved? I said to him, well, what do you mean you don't have a family? I don't have my wife. I got divorced. My wife took everything and all my relatives are dead. I don't have anybody. That's just me. And I said, oh, so you don't matter to anybody is what you're telling me. He said, no. I said, where did you get your coffee? I see you got coffee, right? You bought it at a deli or something. Tell me about that coffee. Where did, well, I got, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I got it from the local market. I said, who did you buy it from at the local market? Says Samantha. I said, tell me about Samantha. He said, well, she's 17 years old, works every morning before school. Now she helps out the parents. The place opens up at 5 a.m. She works from 5 to 7, for then she goes to high school. I said, if you got her hurt with Sam, would that impact Samantha? He told me all about Samantha. I won't go. He told me all about her because, see, I've known her since she's 6 years old. I've been going to the same place for coffee. This is in central Pennsylvania. So you think that it would impact her if you got hurt or you didn't show up? You got killed on the job? And he was like, and then it hit him. Oh,
yeah.
What mattered to Samantha? Okay. All right. You're not going to get that through this big pie in the sky program, but you got to get a little bit involved with people sometimes appropriately. I'm going to say appropriately.
Yeah.
No.
That's consistent because your programs, you set them up, you write them up, you do everything you need, your written programs, your actual, the work that you're doing, your JSAs and everything else. But when it's time for implementation, then that's where the rubber meets the road and you're actually going to, you know, see the results and the fruit of your results. So it's consistent that, you know, you're going to end up in when you see workers and you're training them, you want to get them at their level. So kinesthetic learners, they're going to need to actually feel you know, they're going to feel it. So if you're in a topic with fall protection and you're going to tell them about, you know, steel erection 15 feet, you get tied off. And if not, you know, what's going to happen to you? All right. So let's say you got extremely lucky and you broke a leg. All right. Let's tie up that leg. Let's see what it looks like. Walk around here with that leg up. Feel it. Let the kinesthetic learner feel those things. You know, all right, you're working with chemicals. You got some in your eyes because you're not wearing your glasses. Close your eyes for me. Come on, just walk to me. I'm going to listen to my voice. Walk to me. How does that feel? And now those workers, now the kinesthetic type, they'll learn auditory. You got them. They're listening to you like podcast mode. The visual learners, they'll be looking at you. They'll look at your video. They're in. The kinesthetic learners, that you're the ones that really need to feel things. You gotta put them in the position to feel it, to go through it. The senses has to, as best as you can, experience it. So now it's going to stick with them a little longer. And hopefully that's
a whole, you just gave a whole safety meeting on adult education here. You do realize that. We need to wrap things up here because it's a nice, beautiful, glorious Sunday morning here.
Yeah, before we get to 103, I'm stuck in OKC.
Where are you? Kansas City?
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma? Yeah. Well, New York, we're dealing with a 95% humidity. And 90, yeah, so we're just as miserable here.
Go to Jones Beach.
Yeah. I'll be in that neighborhood tomorrow. But anyway, they had a... but anyway, what was I?
Oh, did I throw you off?
Yeah, you threw me off. That doesn't matter. That's not so hard to do. That's easy. But, you know, getting on with the whole conversation here, now it's getting involved with people and being person to person and everything else is a lot of stuff out there with that. Oh, with the blindness, there is a better way of doing it. I don't think it's legal or not. I think it would get the person hurt, right? People say, well, close your eyes, imagine you're blind. That's not the actual analog. From what I've read, and I've spoken to a couple of blind people, it's the equivalent when you go blind, like from an industrial injury, or let's say you have to have your eyes extracted for some reason, like cancer or something like that, you actually see white light. It's like someone shining a spotlight in your eyes all the time. And that's why they have blind people often have problems. They had commercials here in the New York area for years where they have no sleep. They have sleep disorders because they can't get to sleep because it's like they're always getting hit with floodlight in their face at all times, you know? So... Like I said, that would probably be illegal. You'd probably burn someone's retina if you did that. You know, that's like probably. Yeah.
Where are you in a nice interrogation?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm a Star Trek fan, right? And there's one episode on The Next Generation where you have the car gets captured by the Cardassians. I was just watching it the other day. I forget the name of it. And now, how many lights are there, right? And there's no four lights. No, there's five lights. Yeah, and then you torture the first. This is like hell the way a lot of safety investigations go. It's going to go one way. And now I'm to the point where I say, and this, and the challenge is the clients often. I said, do you want an accident investigation? You want a one pager or do you want an accident investigation? If you want a one pager, I'm not your guy. If you want an actual investigation, I'm definitely your guy. Or if I'm not your guy, I know somebody who is, because, you know, scheduling and everything else. Because again, you know, what do you want out of that investigation? Do you want to just file a piece of paper? What is it, the OSHA 300A form, is it, with the actual accident? One of those 300 forms.
Yeah,
301, yeah. Right, where it's the, you know, it was one page and it doesn't tell you anything, you know? You're meeting the regulation, but it's really not telling you anything.
Yeah, and that actually is, if you go to OSHA's budget, not to throw you too far away, because we're
wrapping up,
right, brother? But the OSHA budget will tell you the intent of that record-keeping law. And
what's the intent?
The intent is, if you see your here's the rule of thumb. How's that? Rule of thumb is going to be, if you see your... if you're required to keep records, and especially if you're one of these high hazard industries that hit the NAICS codes, right, that OSHA writes up, the rule of thumb is if you see 3 years of increase, you're going to get yourself an inspection. So 3 years. And that's the and it's going to be a way, because now your EIN number is tied into your electronic record keeping. OSHA has the 300 log, the 301, and the 300A log now, which certain companies, which they wanted to do for the first time, they made this rule. They came back and got it in. And the purpose is to cut their budget and put their FTEs on people who are not reporting, and then people who are also they're doing that, you're self-reporting, that you're getting an increase every 3 years, or they're going to kind of review your numbers, if you would. So you will see more of OSHA even in general industry because of that.
Well, that's what it is. So in conclusion, so we're over time here. Over time. I'll do the whole thing. It's just, you know, when I do my live show, we'll only be able to do like an edited, a bridge. But I'll podcast and video cast, I'll do the whole thing. Except for when my daughter came down here and I lost my train of thought.
I'm putting that all in. I don't care. I'm a one take guy. I'm the same guy who puts everything from the grocery store. I'm fitting it all in. I'm going one time into the house.
By the way, if you listen to my show, you will hear the one promo. We're on the platform that I'm on now. Hold on. Noise suppression is. Okay, here you go. Hold on. This is my daughter here. Hold on. OSHA Recordables. Catastrophic losses. Environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Polzel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Did you hear that? I came through. No, that's my daddy. That's my daughter. All right. No. She sits right here next to me in the wintertime. In the summertime, we don't have air conditioning in the basement, so she's not. But wintertime, she's here all winter listening to the show. And I said, you want to be part of the show? And I said, yeah, yell, that's my daddy.
All right. Well, we got to get her something with maybe get her to sign off on your next JSA.
Yeah.
Sure she understands all the hazards, but
she's my son. All right. And he doesn't remember this. When he was 4 years old, he's helping my wife bring in bags from shopping, and something was leaking in the bag, whether it was milk or some juice, something was leaking. And my wife is like, I don't understand, it's leaking. And you know what he says to my wife? Well, no, mommy, there's three ways that water could get through it. It could be through an imperfection in the bag, through a hole, right? It could be because of chemical degradation, where the thing dissolves the thing, or it could be from just the amount of time it takes the water to get from one side to the other.
Oh.
Yeah, and he says it, and I look, and she says, you've been listening to your father's conference calls, haven't you?
Oh, that's awesome.
4 years old.
4 years old, and he already knows the analysis part. That's awesome. He told him three different ways.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's good. Now he's ready, so get him on the payroll.
He's also the most risk-averse child you'll ever meet. And he'll give you reasons for being risk-averse.
I was about to say, it's too much analysis. So his brain is going faster than his action. So that's one of those kids that you just have to say, just don't think about it. Just do it. Right. Have fun.
One of my best programs, I think I'm going to release it again because it's relevant to what's going on up in Maine right now. They're having huge wildfire smoke issues from Canada. I don't know if you're right about that at all.
No.
So we were having the wildfires here last year with a thing. And what was really freaky was I live on about a half a mile away. I have a mountain, what we call a mountain here. Not a mountain on the you're at, but what we call a mountain, South Mountain. And I was out doing something on the front lawn. I forget what it was. And I see the smoke coming over the mountain. And then down it was like the blob. Wow. And that was the wildfire smoke. Like, I got the front. I should have had the camera out because it was, like, really, like, freaky. You could see the front of it coming through. It was rolling in, right? And the teacher used this as she was in third grade, used it as a teachable moment where they went into, believe it or not, the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. And this is third grade class. And they got all on the news what it means. No, on the third grade level, she was so excited she came over to see me. And then, hey, do you know this? And we went on. And I said, no, this is cool. So I said, do you want to go out and see where they collect the data for that station? She says, yeah. Where is that, Daddy? And I have a picture of me and her in front of the station. It's about a mile away from the house. So we did a whole program on it, and that was one of my most viewed programs on. Wildfire smokes and National Ambient Air Quality Standards.
And she was along for the ride.
She got the biggest kick out of it, and the teachers were all talking about it at school for about a week. So,
oh man, that's very cool. Now she's going to end up with some sort of gig bag, and you're going to have to holding the mic when a boom.
But anyway, was there anything you wanted to conclude with? I think we had a pretty good conversation here. Everything.
No, that was fine. I just really love just touching base with you, and it's been so long. And honestly, I did the whole DEI because there's so many people who on my podcast that were just thinking it's evil, and I'm like, well, it's not a cuss word. It's not a four letter word.
Right.
It's just when you truly understand it, it's just. The best way to get equity you get functional as organization, get some more ideas, and it all goes to psychological safety, because now that's the new frontier for safety. We're finally, COVID broke us, quite honestly, as an industry for a little bit, and then we had to rebend and get caught up really quick. And this is one of the things that that we saw the fortify our safety system is. Oh yeah, we forgot about the brain, the psychological side, the emotions. So I'm glad to talk to someone about that stuff. And if you need to look for me, anybody, then just go to SheldonPrimus.com. Nice and simple.
Nice as SheldonPrimus.com. I'm trying to figure out here. I wrote a book. I'm sorry, I wrote a letter. To one of my, I can't find it here. All right. Back in 2011, right. This was the last of my, political type stuff. Right. And what I pointed out was, and this is 2011, all that people have to do, right. Everyone knows I'm an independent conservative. I'm not, I'm registered Republican, but I'm really, I'm conservative / libertarian. All right. They, when people figure it out how much they're being screwed, that's when we're going to have turmoil.
Yeah.
And what happened was everybody's working. I put in typically 14 to 16 hour days at work, right? Especially with one of my current projects, which is coming to an end sometime next year. I'm working, and when I'm not on that project, I'm on that project 3 weeks a month. When I'm not on that project, I'm catching up on everything for the 2 weeks I'm off. All right, so I'm on three, off two. I'm working. I know you're in the same situation. The situation you're in is a little bit different because you're mobile all the time, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, we talked about that last time, and, you know, you're having a great time doing that, right?
We're 2 weeks away from Mexico for 6 months.
Right. So, you know, you're always working. You're always doing something. You're always doing, you know, whatever. And that's how everybody else is trying to make ends meet. And then what happened is the COVID pandemic and everybody's at home watching TV on the computer, on the smartphone, playing video games, whatever, cooped up in their house. Now time people have time to reflect and everything. And that's a direct consequence of what we're dealing with now. In the safety field, I mean, this is how I got involved in podcasts and everything. In the safety field, there's a lot of crossover between safety and DEI, as I see it. Maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm not. Or maybe I'm seeing a connection that I want to be there that isn't there. Whatever. There's a lot of congruity between the two. I think that it's not an enemy. We should be working together with this. Yeah. We don't have to be enemies. And unfortunately, like everything else, politicians get involved to push things.
Yeah.
And things that we never intended this to go to have gone there. And this is where our issue is. And I think that's where we're having issues with. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not. I don't know. That's my read on it.
Yeah, I'm agreed. Just it's practical. And when you really think about it, what would make workers feel like you care? Just do that. Whatever you think will make a worker feel like you care, do that. And everything else will work out.
All right. So your website and podcast and everything?
Yes.
One more time.
Primus.com, the podcast, any service that you have, just type in safety consultant and it'll come out safety consultant with Sheldon Primus, and then safetyconsultant.tv. So you're able to get like my written templates. I give you all that stuff from the site on safety consultant TV and download that stuff. So got me on all those three places.
And everyone here knows me. My office phone, 845-269-5772. Jim@safetywars.com. Safetywars.com is the website. And you'll go into any one of your search engines, Safety Wars, Jim Poesel, P-O-E-S-L. Not the other way, please. Easy to remember, all right? P-O-E-S-L, but how do you say it? My favorite word is proposal. Proposal, right? Favorite word. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Sheldon. I'm going to stop right here.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.